Members, the first thing we are going to take up is a confirmation of current serving tax court judge Kathleen Voss Sandberg. And members, the appointment letter and a little background. Ms. Sandberg is in your packet. Ms. Sandberg, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you.
If you would, why don't you tell us a little something about your background and your previous tenure on the court?
I was born and raised in Minneapolis, went to the University of Minnesota, both undergrad and law school, and I've been practicing law for about 25 years. I first was with the Oppenheimer Law Firm, then I was practiced in California for a few years, and when I returned, I practiced with the Fagerin Benson Firm and then joined the tax court in 2001. I married. My husband is with me. My son wanted to come this morning, but he's at the U taking an exam, and he didn't think he could get away from the exam. And my daughter is in graduate school in Washington, D.C. And in terms of the tax court, as I said, I've been on for 6 years. I'm not sure what all of you would like to have me say about that.
Not a lot. So this would be your second term?
That's correct. Our terms are 6 years.
You like what you do?
I do.
Members, any questions? Senator Pogemiller, any questions? Tax court, important position.
Doing a wonderful job.
Anything else, members? Senator Larson moves that the Tax Committee recommend the appointment of Kathleen Voss Sandberg be confirmed and sent to the full Senate. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Thank you very much. Senator Saksok. Senator Saksog has Senate File 438, and members, we have the third engrossment in front of us.
Thank you.
Senator Saksog, do you have an amendment that somebody's going to offer on your behalf, Senator Slay?
Yeah, thank you.
Let's get the bill
Chair.
Kind of into shape, I think, where Senator Saksog has kind of been negotiating with some of the parties. Senator Slay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I've been working with Senator Saksog and other people on this to try to clean this up a little bit. And I would like to offer the A9 amendment, and while it's being passed out, members, if you look at your Senate Council research analysis, what the A9 amendment includes is Section 5, 9, and 10 of the Senate Council summary. We've tried to clean this up so it only affects the parts that we need, and that we just are dealing with the 5-axle trucks for 80,000 pounds, the 6-axle trucks for 90,000, 7-axles for 97,000. We do include all of the conditions on the A9 amendment, page 2, subdivision 4. If you want to read through those, the one I would particularly draw your attention to is on page 3, lines 3 through 7. This subdivision specifically says that any percent allowances do not apply to any of these vehicles.
So, Senator Skoy, with reference to work that other committees have done on this, are we adding anything new to the bill, or are we just taking things out?
There might be a few technical changes, but we're mostly just deleting portions of the bill. We have left Section 5, 9, and 10 from the original bill.
Senator Saxok, to the Skoy Amendment?
Well, it's, as you say, Mr. Chair and members, this is a forestry bill. There was some concerns when it came out of transportation, which I think this A9 amendment takes care of. And I have with me today Wayne Brand of the Minnesota Timber Producers and Gary Sikvenik of Laurentian Energy to answer any questions that you might have on this amendment. So.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogwinner.
Well, Senator Skoy. Well, Mr. Chair, it wouldn't have to have been a delete everything. We could have just gone into the original amendment. We thought it would be easier for the committee to just draft it this way, but we could have gone in because we're basically what we've left is as I said, Section 5 and Section 9 and Section 10, and the language is all in the bill, the third engrossment. Now, there, with regard to Section 5, Mr. Brandt might have some comments to make with that, but Section 9 and 10, I think, are identical to what's in the bill.
So Senator Skoy, to Senator Pogelmeier's point, what the Delete Everything Amendment does is reduces the bill?
It doesn't
add new things other than some technical corrections?
Mr. Brandt can clarify what was added in Section 5, but otherwise it's just reducing the bill.
Mr. Brandt, tell us what we're doing with the amendment.
Wayne Brandt, Minnesota Forest Industries, Minnesota Timber Producers. I believe the only language that's added is the provision that clarifies in the ag area that it applies to raw and unfinished agricultural products.
And Mr. Brandt, is that a narrowing of the bill?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Sieben?
Mr. Chair and Senator Skoy, how could you just, I remember the discussion in Transportation Committee, but could you just explain how this amendment is different than the one you offered in Transportation?
Well, if you look at the Senate File 438, the third engrossment, you'll see that we deal with a number of weight tables. We've taken that out of the bill. Subsection 2 is gross vehicle weights of all axles. We've taken that part out. There's provisions in here dealing with a harvest season increase amount. We've taken that out. There was a section in here dealing with 9-ton roads. We've taken that out. There was Section 6, which dealt with variable load axles that must be located where they must have been located. We've taken that out. There was a provision in there for seasonal permits for certain haulers. We've taken that out. We were telling the department what to do with the fee that they're collecting. We've taken that out. So it's quite a bit of removal from what was in Transportation.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Matt. Mr. Chair. Senator Skoy, I notice on this amendment, on page 1, line 31, You are bringing up a new reference of 99,000 pounds during a period set by the commissioner. I notice that the handout here only has a reference up to 97,000 pounds. I was wondering if you could explain to me what this period set by the commissioner refers to.
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, if I could get some help from the testifiers on that, would be helpful for me.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, I believe that section is the winter load increase section of law, where there's a 10% allowance when the roads are frozen as set by MnDOT.
What we're talking about, Mr. Chair, is that when the ground is frozen, you don't have a softer underlayment underneath the pavement. And so because it's frozen, the road can handle more weight because it's got a much stronger base underneath the road during our winter months. And the commissioner would set that time period. I know why we were going to allow the commissioner to do it, because weather conditions change. Seasonal differences are not the same every single year, and so we're going to allow. Now, is this the Commissioner of Transportation that's going to be setting this? All right. Makes sense.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sway.
Mr. Chair, for clarity, I'm pretty sure it's not the 10% winter allowances because, as I pointed out on page 3 of the amendment, lines 3 through 7 is the provision that deals with the percentage increase for winter haul, and they specifically do not apply. So I'd have to go look at what section 169.826 subdivision 1 is in order to answer that question.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Saxon.
Senator Scoy, the reason that you did that was there has been some reference to 107,000 would be possible, and that eliminates
that.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Lemire.
This probably isn't a tax question, but it's a question of, you know, being a metropolitan legislator, we run into a lot of problems with speed in highly compressed populated areas. And are these trucks limited to not drive with heavy loads like this in the metropolitan area or any other area of the state? Are they confined to specific roads? Could you answer me that?
Senator Saxon.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Lemire, right now, of course, we have a law which says the first haul for forestry products, logs coming out of the woods and going to the plants, can have this extra amount of weight. And we found that by doing that, we haven't had any particular wear and tear on the roads, and in fact, we have less truck hauling because you cut down so many logs in the woods, and you're not going to have any more if you have any heavier weight trucks. You're just going to have less trips out of the woods into the plants. And so the whole object of this is the next step, the second haul from the plants to the market, and the fact that with the additional axles, which indeed have less weight per axle, and the reduced number of trips, that ultimately we're going to have safer highways and less wear and tear on the roads.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Lemire.
This particular amendment is a little different than what some of the lobbyists have visited me on, and I see that you may be talking about that first trip out of the woods, but I see that the vehicles will be able to haul not only wood chips, but paper pulp oriented strand board, laminated strand lumber, etc. In the metropolitan area, we have a lot of development on the outer suburbs, and huge trucks are hauling heavy loads of oriented strand board, which is very heavy and very dense. And my concern is in fast-moving freeways that are highly populated. I take, for example, Highway 94 up in Maple Grove. There's 120,000 cars a day that drive on that road. And in that stretch between Maple Grove and Rogers, in the last 9 years, we've had over 2,200 accidents. Not always with trucks or heavy trucks that are hauling, but speed mixed with a dense population going at a very high rate of speed. If you have a real heavy load driving that fast, it's going to be very hard to stop something that heavy in a highly populated area. And my concern is not so much the first load out of the woods, but it's more concerned about carrying that end product to the, whatever market that you're going to, a lumber yard in the Twin Cities, a Home Depot store that sells quite a bit of that oriented strand board. I'm just concerned about the safety on roads that are moving rather quickly and highly populated movement of traffic, and I'm just concerned about that. And since this is a different amendment than what I was lobbied on, I'm trying to now swallow the the ultimate concerns that people in my district are going to have to deal with.
Mr. Chair?
So I think Senator Scoy wants to speak.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Loomer. Well, the amendment is just smaller. It's not significantly different, but if on the amendment you go to page 2, you'll see that these trucks are restricted from the interstate highways, so they wouldn't be on 94.
Okay. Well, Senator Scoy,
Senator Loomer.
That is how it was represented to me. I was concerned about travel routes. Mm-hmm. And as you know, that was my first question out of the loop, and I hadn't gotten a defined answer on it. I'm glad you answered it for me.
Anything else, members? Senator Pogemiller.
Chairman, I absolutely have no, I don't know what's going on here. All I know is we have a third engrossment with a delete everything. It's a little unusual. Means it's been to two committees.
I think, Senator Pogemiller, what the could have been drafted as an amendment, but I think what they're doing is actually taking about 10 sections out of the bill. Senator Scoy, is that accurate?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We probably shouldn't have drafted it as a delete everything. We should have just deleted section, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 11, 12, 13 from the bill, and it would have done the same thing.
Senator Pogemiller.
The form of it is not what I'm, I guess maybe, does this resolve all the conflict around this bill? Is that what's going on here? Or does this add conflict into the bill?
Senator Scoy.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Pogemiller, we are trying to resolve conflict with regard to this bill. I can't say that we've resolved all the conflict, but our effort is to try to keep moving to resolve conflict.
Senator Pogemiller, I think what happened is when this bill went through the other committees, committee chairs moved it along before the negotiations were concluded and urged them to continue to work on it as the bill traveled. And I believe they've been doing that. And I maybe it shouldn't have gotten here until there was closer to an agreement, but chairs made a decision to move it forward. And Senator Saksok, does this move the two sides closer to an agreement?
Mr. Chair, yes, I believe it does. As the sections that were taken out weren't particularly controversial, but they, I think that this simplifies the bill and makes it easier to understand. And in terms of improving the conflict, it does.
Senator Moy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Saxhog, it doesn't mean that it has to address it, because maybe that's the issue where the two will never come together. But the one issue that it doesn't address is the concern that because the bigger, heavier load trucks can't go on I-94, they're now going to go on the smaller roads. I think that's a point of concern for some of the members on the Transportation Committee. I don't know if that could be resolved, but if that's a point of contention that won't be resolved, then, you know, we should just put it on the record here, because I understand that that was a major point of concern for a lot of the members on the Transportation Committee who were from the outer ring or the suburbs.
I understand that, but the Transportation Committee did send the bill out. Senator Sieben?
Mr. Chair, and Senator Scoy can correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that similar language was offered as an amendment and failed in Transportation Committee, and now it's showing up here again.
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, yes, there was an amendment that was similar that tied at a 9-9 vote. There were a couple of committee members who were gone, who I believe, if this gets to the floor, will be supported.
Anything else, members?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Sundrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to get at a question I have, and maybe Senator Scoy can, or Saksok can help me. Or perhaps both. In my area of the state, there's a lot of interest, of course, in shipment of agricultural goods, and even to the effect that some of these big trucks on township roads are a little difficult. Would the, and I'm looking at subdivision, section 2, subdivision 1, where it talks about a road authority. Could that be a county board or a township board that would impose weight restrictions on their respective areas of domain?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Saksak?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Sanjam, yes. To the answer your question, yes. And the one thing that I'd reiterate as you speak and talk about township roads and county roads is that the first Hall bill that is in effect right now that is used in northern Minnesota, the third axle, and that hauls logs out of the woods, of course, they're mostly on township sure. roads and county roads. And we found this to be a successful way of approaching things. Again, you have less right. less actual trips with the truck. So in terms of safety and wear and tear, we think this improves it.
Thank you.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I hear this addresses some of the concerns or some of the differences. Are there people here who have objections that we could hear from?
Sure. I thought we would try to get the bill in the shape that.
Yeah, I mean, we could deal with the amendment. Yeah, I meant on the bill in general, but I
right.
not before the amendment.
One of the things the amendment does is there were, three different tax provisions in this bill that we're taking out with this amendment because they're, I believe all three of them are being carried in the omnibus tax bill. So that's one thing this amendment does do is take. I think there was a sales tax exemption on skidder tires, upfront exemption on capital equipment, and the single sales factor also were in this. It's pretty loaded up when it got here, Senator Saksak, for a forestry bill. So,
good
members, why don't we try to get the A9 amendment on, and then we'll see what we have. Do we have other amendments, Council?
If this is taken care of, it incorporates.
This council tells me that if this amendment goes on, the other amendments are redundant.
There might be one that
on the SCOI motion on the A9 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
Motion prevails. A9 is adopted. Mr. Brandt, anything further to say?
No, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Anybody else want to testify on the bill?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Matt Hodapp. I'm with the State Patrol. I've been a member of the State Patrol for 24 years. I'm here representing the State Troopers Association. I'm on that board. I'm past president, currently Southern Delegate at Large. As far as the weight increase bill, when it went in previously for the first haul for logging, at that time I'd come here and testify that what we'll see in the future, which is what we're seeing now, is the nose of the camel getting under the tent and eventually the camel's trying to get all the way in. I believe that the A9 cleaned up a lot of that question, now limiting it to first haul of raw agricultural products. But I think in time we're going to also see other industries looking to increase and ratchet up the weights as well. Realizing that this is the tax committee and that your only concern is on the tax arena, I would like to address a couple of just the safety points that the troopers out on the road see. I worked in the truck section for a period of time, have investigated crashes involving commercial vehicles, and one thing that when you ratchet up the weights, while you're adding axles and adding brakes to the combination, what we've seen in the industry is that roughly one-third of the vehicles that are out there, when they go through a saturation inspection, we end up putting at least one-third of the vehicles out of commission due to faulty brakes and other equipment violations. In order to meet that criteria, that would mean 25% of the brake capability is not functioning. And I believe that we're going to continue to see that. What that means is for currently an 80,000-pound truck driving down the road, a straight stretch of road, dry pavement, at 60 miles an hour, when it applies its brakes with all the brakes working, it takes roughly the length of a football field to stop, 300 feet. When you take 25% of the brakes out of adjustment, back those off, and try the same thing at 60 miles an hour, it takes between 450 and 600 feet to stop an 80,000-pound vehicle, roughly the length of almost two football fields. When you add the weight that we're talking about adding by ratcheting these weights up, that is going to increase that distance. And this would be very concerning, particularly considering that these vehicles are not operating on the interstate system because Congress won't allow it, but rather on our secondary roads. And the aftermath of the safety component is that while the bigger trucks wouldn't necessarily cause maybe more fatalities, in 2004 there were 70 fatal accidents involving trucks, 79 fatalities of that in there, in the combined crashes, 1,935 personal injuries. And I believe that by ratcheting up the weights, we're going to see an increase both in the fatalities and in the personal injury crashes. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, I'll wait a little bit.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Steve Frank. I'm the president and CEO of AAA Minneapolis, and I'm here representing the AAA clubs of Minnesota who oppose this measure. We oppose it really for three counts: safety, wear and tear on the roads, and equity and finance. The safety issue is a compelling one, and as Senator Limmer said, for those of us in the metro area who are faced with truck traffic that currently runs on the interstate highway system, to see it diverted to our county and city roads and to our state highways is a critical issue. 45% of the semi-truck traffic in the state of Minnesota rides on the few hundred miles of our interstate highway system. The other 55% is off the truck highway system. But 80% of truck crashes involving semis happen off the interstate highway system. So according to Minnesota crash facts, semis operating off our interstate system are three times more dangerous than they would be if they're riding on the interstate. When MnDOT conducted its truck size and weight study a couple of years ago, it concluded that these heavier trucks are more likely to roll over, they're less maneuverable, they climb hills more slowly, and they are, in fact, more dangerous than trucks of a similar length, width, and height by virtue of their weight alone. So what we're doing is putting more dangerous vehicles on our most dangerous roadways. So the safety issue for us is very compelling. In terms of wear and tear and funding, since this is the tax committee, I think it's important to note that the Wisconsin Department of Transportation came to a completely different conclusion than MnDOT did concerning wear and tear on bridges. When the Wisconsin Department of Transportation was faced with a similar bill being analyzed from the legislature in 2005, they concluded that the Wisconsin State Highway System could face as much as $1.75 billion in bridge reconstruction without even factoring in the bridges that were currently scheduled to be reconstructed. And finally, in terms of equity of finance, the Federal Highway Administration, in their Western Regional Study, concluded that trucks of greater than 80,000 pounds gross vehicle weight collect only 50 cents in taxes and fees for every dollar that they produce in damage to our roads. So, members, we're very concerned about this bill. We understand it as just another inning in the game to have larger and bigger trucks on our state highways. We understand the need to have productivity in trucking, but we think that this measure is the wrong approach.
Thank you, Mr. Frank.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bill Gillespie, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association. We represent about 8,500 police officers across the state, including the state troopers, who originally brought this issue to us a number of years ago. when the first escalation of weights was proposed and was supposed to be a one-time thing, they would never be back to increase them again. I would remind the chair and Senator Skoy that I am now officially an adopted ranger. Representative Rukavina made me that last night and did give me a sign that indicated that I am adopted now. So,
did he give you any paperwork, Mr. Gillespie?
No, actually he can't write. But he did make his mark. We oppose the bill and continue to oppose the bill. The A9 amendment certainly cleans up some issues, but not ours. Ours is still big is bad. Bigger is badder. Frankly, at this point, I feel a certain momentum on the bill, but we did want to put the association, continue to oppose this. Frankly, the argument is whether or not 80,000, there were some concerns about is there more lethality between 80,000 and 97,000 or whatever. And without boring you to death about the kinetic energy of a larger a mass striking you, let me just say, take my word for that. Secondly, we are in a position that this is a slippery slope as far as we're concerned. And if there is, in fact, no basis for our argument that larger truck weights are somehow more inherently dangerous and inimical to public safety, then no weight limit is the standard. You could put 10 or 12 or 15 of these things together and run them down the highway because weight and mass simply don't make any difference at that point, if that's the argument. We believe it's not true, or otherwise they'd be running on 94, 35, and 90, and they're not. The federal government says there's an inimical effect to public safety for that, and it's also damaging to the road system. So with that, I would simply, I've made all my arguments earlier in different committees. You've all heard them. So I would just simply say our association still remains opposed to increasing the weights of the vehicles.
Thank you, Mr. Glisby. Next witness.
Mr. Chair, my name is Matt Hollinsett. I'm the transportation chair of the Minnesota chapter of the Sierra Club. There are at least three environmental reasons this is a bad bill. Energy efficiency, emissions, and transportation choices. As many of you know, the Sierra Club has for a long time advocated and fought hard for transportation choices, livable communities, and options for pedestrians, bicyclists, and transit users. Supersizing trucks impacts mobility by growing road and street footprints in our communities over time. When we allow larger and or heavier trucks, we change the nature of our communities, reducing their walkability, livability, and pedestrian safety. Developers, public works departments, zoning officials, anyone else with a technical role must design for the largest vehicle sizes and weights. We have a mode for large load. It's called freight rail. Why would we put the equivalent of a train on the unguided roadway mere feet from our automobiles? Why would we want our loved ones traveling within mere feet of these behemoths in snow, ice, rain, sleet, and wind? The asymmetry in safety between passenger rail and passenger transportation on the roads is also a big concern of ours. Passenger rail cars, as some of you may know, are required to withstand substantial incidents with freight rail cars. But on our roads, currently, very, very heavy trucks, again, travel right next to cars that can weigh as little as 1,500 pounds. From an environmental point of view, this asymmetry makes it hard to advocate for transportation choices. So we're concerned on that ground as well. The two more well-known issues, energy and emissions. On energy, the efficiency per ton mile of rail is 10 times that of trucks. 346 BTU per ton mile for trucks for rail versus 3,337 BTU per ton mile for trucks. This has been documented in many studies. As far as emissions are concerned, American Society of Mechanical Engineers estimates that 2.5 million fewer tons of carbon dioxide would be emitted into the air annually if just 10% of intercity freight now moving by highway were shifted to rail. That's from ASHTO, the Trade Association of the Transportation Engineers. PM10 particulate matter emission rates can be as much as 10 times as high for trucks as for rail, and the release of VOCs, volatile organic compounds, from trucks can be an astounding 17 times the rate for trucks as for rail. Now, this is the tax committee. There are expenses when mitigating environmental problems, when trying to protect clean air, trying to protect clean water, and trying to use energy more efficiently. So I would urge you as members of the tax committee to consider those financial consequences. Our interest, naturally, is primarily the environment, but we also understand that there are huge financial, fiscal, tax consequences to a bill such as this. Thank you.
Thank you. Next witness.
Chairman. My name is Yvonne Shopland. I am president of the General Federation of Women's Club of Minnesota. I am here to speak on behalf of 2,000 members and over 100 communities across the state of Minnesota. I'm going to skip most of my statement and go right to the punch. We all know that this is unsafe. This is not a technical issue. This is not about whether this saves tax dollars to Minnesota citizens who will pay for the roads and the bridges because of the damage done by increasing loads on the roads. This is not about whether we can justify the economic studies of engineering reports that show businesses in Minnesota will save money. This is about public safety, plain and simple. No amount of monies can justify a single death or a single injury that will result from putting heavier, more dangerous trucks on our roads, specifically our rural communities. We stand firm against increasing the weight limits of truckloads. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else want to testify? Senator Johnson.
No, I'll wait till
after. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll kind of start. Everybody's kind of mentioned that these trucks are going to be bigger, which leaves the impression that they're physically going to be bigger. There's no proposal to change the physical size of the truck. The truck will be the same size. It's just going to be a little more efficient in what it's hauling. With regard to the wear and tear on the road, this is the MnDOT report with regard to pavement impacts. As you can see, the equivalent single axle load factor is actually lower with the more axles and the heavier weights, and the corresponding amount of brakes is a comparable ratio. With regard to the person who talked about the city traffic, none of these will be allowed on the interstates, and most of this is first haul egg products. I don't think there's very much first haul egg products traveling through the metropolitan area. For myself, to the witness who talked about the need for good brakes on trucks, I couldn't agree with them more. We're not asking for any special considerations. We think that trucks and axles ought to have good brakes. With regard to the rail effect of this bill, there are no rail lines traveling from the fields to the elevators. I mean, they just aren't. You can't put this first haul egg product on a rail line. It has to travel from the field to the elevator, and then perhaps it can travel on rail. But the first haul egg products, there's no rail lines available. Actually, for the environment, I think we'll burn less fuel. And to the safety, the part of the safety formula that nobody's talking about is that this will be 12% less trucks on the road. That's a significant reduction. And so according to MnDOT, we're not damaging the pavement. We're complying with all bridge load limits as posted. We're subject to all seasonal load restrictions, subject to all axle weight limits. I think the reduction of the number of trucks because of a more efficient weighting of the same size trucks, I think this makes a lot of sense, and I would hope for your support.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is to the first testifier. I'm sorry, your name again?
Matt Hodapp. with the State Troopers Association.
Mr. Chairman, you were talking about inspections and the failure rate. How often do you inspect this type of vehicle?
It's our unit has a commercial vehicle inspection spread around the state. It's not like school buses where they're required to be inspected by the state patrol every year. Rather, the vehicles themselves are inspected annually. Oftentimes, if it's a good-sized trucking company, they'll have one of their own maintenance people certified to inspect their own trucks. As to the every day, daily, the truck driver is required to inspect the vehicle and double-check the braking and the equipment.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It sounds to me like there's a lot of safety measures in place for this. It sounds like it's almost like an airline, an airplane, where, you know, they're not going to use the vehicle unless it's running tip-top. It sounds like there's an annual state inspection, a company inspection, and a daily inspection. So I'm not quite convinced on the safety I'm not convinced on the safety argument.
Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, if all of our drivers were doing what they're supposed to be doing, we wouldn't be putting one out of three trucks out of service at these inspections. And what this is just a snapshot area where you might get two troopers and several commercial vehicle inspectors together, and as the trucks come through, they do a front-to-back inspection on them, and one out of three are pulled because of their braking and other equipment violations, which does not qualify them to be on the road. So the industry itself needs to make sure that they require their truck drivers to inspect these vehicles on a daily basis.
Cool. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, my dad's an over-the-road retired Teamster and pretty safe guy. So you still haven't convinced me.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, and to the witness, you know, for those of us that serve on the Transportation Committee, we listen to the Highway Patrol and Transportation tell us how effective this was and how they actually, because it is so effective, they wanted to change the school bus inspection mechanism to this type of mechanism. So for those of us that serve on transportation, we heard testimony about what a good inspection and how this current program has been reducing accidents and making the roads safer. I'm a little surprised to hear differing testimony today.
Senator Langsa.
Mr. Chair, members, I think there's, as I said in the Transportation Committee, there's mainly a perception problem here, but not an actual problem. In my area, it's the sugar beet industry that would use this. Back when there were mostly single-axle trucks, there were considerably more accidents during sugar beet harvest than there is now. And when I've talked to law enforcement, they say that the trucks are so much safer, the brakes are so much better, and so on. So I don't think the safety factor really comes into this. There's much more braking power per pound of load under this bill than there is currently. And the only problem is when they get out on the bridges, but they have to go according to the way those bridges are posted. So I just think there's a perception problem and not a real problem.
Anything else, members? Does anybody else want to testify on the bill? Railroads want to weigh in. I heard you're spending money trying to defeat it. Anybody from the railroads want to weigh in on it?
Roads are trying to kill it.
Nobody from the railroads? Mining companies don't come around either these days. I don't know what's going on. Anything else, members? Anybody else with an amendment? Senator Scoy moves that. What bill are we on? Senate File 438, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Sexak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you.
Members, the next bill on the agenda is Senate File 2057, Senator Bach's Airport Authority's creation. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. This bill was drafted over in the House, and I think everybody knows here how capable Senate Council is, and what we have is an A1 amendment that really cleans this bill up and gets it kind of into shape. Doesn't make any changes, but you'll notice the one that I kind of chuckle about is on the A1 amendment, line 16.
Senator Bach, I think the A1 amendment is being passed out now. So if we can just...
The interesting observation that members of this committee, I think, will get a kick out of is on line 16 of the amendment, when the House drafted this bill, they used the word mill rate rather than tax rate. So what the amendment is Senate Council's suggestion about how we clean this up and really get it into the shape where it should go into statute. But Council, if you'd like to talk about the A1, I think that's probably appropriate.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, members, Senator Bach is correct. The changes in this amendment are just kind of cleanup of the language to make it more consistent with the way we express things more typically. For example, rather than referring to Indian nations, we refer to Indian tribes, and there's some other inconsequential changes. The only substantive change is on lines 113 and 114. The bill has a provision for what would happen in the event that the airport authority is dissolved. It provides that remaining funds are distributed to the participating units of government, but it didn't specify how that would happen. So this amendment would say that the distribution would be in proportion to each of those local governments' relative share of the most recent levy for this purpose.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the A1.
Senator Bach moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is it allows for the creation of a multi-governmental airport authority. Currently, municipalities can have airport authorities, counties can have airport authorities, towns can have them. But there's no provision in law where multiple units of government can get together and form an airport authority, appoint commissioners, and then have levy authority to run the airport on a multi-governmental basis. We've got this for hospital districts in law. We've got it in a number of areas. We don't have it for small airports. They have to be willing governmental bodies that enter into a joint powers type agreement here. And I think for airports in small towns, at least, that I'm familiar with, there's a real struggle for small towns to be able to maintain airports. There are willing townships that surround them that benefit a great deal from having an airport in near their community that I think would be willing to participate and willing to pay something to help fund a local airport. And this is permissive language, allows them to enter into an agreement among those governmental units to do just that. So I think that's what all we're doing here. Surprised we haven't done it in previous sessions, actually.
Thank you, Senator Bach. Did you have some individuals that like to testify?
I think, Mr. Chairman, only if members of the committee have questions.
Are there any questions for Senator Bach? Senator Bach moves that Senate File 2057 be recommended to pass.
As amended, Mr. Chairman.
As amended. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
The bill is passed.
Senator Pogemiller, Senate File Number 6.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At some point, there will be a handout. Senate File 6 is the third engrossment of the Cultural and Natural Resource Legacy Act. And it's in the Finance Committee. It was named the Dallas Sam's Outdoor and Cultural Legacy Act. It is a proposal that follows up on the bill that was passed last year in the Senate but failed to come out of a conference committee. It's a 3/8 increase it's a 3/8 of 1% increase in the sales tax for 25 years that would be placed on the ballot as a constitutional amendment to the voters. 33% or 1/3 of that, 1/8, would be dedicated to the Heritage Enhancement Fund for preservation, enhancement of protection of, and protection of state's fish, wildlife, habitat, fish, and land conservation resources. 43%, over 1/3, would be in something called the Great Minnesota Outdoors Fund, which would be for the protection and restoration of water, basically, and parks. And then 24% would be for the Cultural Legacy Fund, which would be for culture, arts, education, arts access throughout the state. In the handout, you can see that distribution, and I will come back to that handout in a moment. The purpose of this legislation is a recognition that there are some core values in Minnesota that we need, that Minnesotans treasure, and that we need to put appropriate public funds into to protect for future generations. On the handout that you've received, you can see that for whatever reason, and it's almost not even worth arguing about why, that funds in the first sheet, shrinking state conservation budget is one of them, and the second is the arts funding cuts. For whatever reason, when budgets become tight, we simply as a legislature and a governor do not make the types of long-term commitments to our natural resources or our cultural legacies and our clean water as we should. And there's been an effort for almost a decade now to try to do something about that and to set aside dedicated revenue for that purpose so that the annual or biannual discussions over revenues do not put us in a position where we just don't keep a cultural commitment, a cultural and a clean water commitment that's necessary for the state. Nobody argues, well, some do, but I'm not going to argue that a constitutional amendment is the best approach. What would be best would be simply to fund this. That would be best. Senator Dill mentioned that in Senator Chaudhary's committee. If we think this is important enough, why don't we just fund it? And it appears, historically, that we simply have not done that, and that we need to have a political authorization to make these kind of commitments. That's what a constitutional amendment affords you, a political authorization to do what it's clear, I think, in most members' minds makes sense in terms of these types of commitments. So I simply am not going to argue to a member that a constitutional amendment is the best way to go. But we don't live in a world that's perfect. And there's clearly a problem here. Our generation is simply not fulfilling its commitment to future generations. That's why it apparently needs to be a constitutional amendment. I've come a long way on that. 10 years ago, I did not support the constitutional amendment approach. But Senator Lessard and others convinced someone like me that unless we do this, we're simply not going to get the job done. And I think the last 4 or 5 years has made Senator Lessard a prophet on that, he and others, obviously. So that's why a constitutional amendment. For whatever reasons, in terms of taxes, for whatever reasons, voters prefer sales taxes. I think the fairest tax is the income tax, but voters prefer sales taxes. The polling shows that overwhelmingly. I remember a poll during the Ventura years that showed that there has been a massive shift in attitude about this among voters. We have historically used the sales tax to fund these types of items, and so I think it just seems kind of normal to use the sales tax for this purpose. The sales tax is the second best alternative of the major taxes in terms of the progressivity measurement. And obviously the income tax is the best. So I would argue for those who believe we should use the income tax, that in this instance, second best is where we need to go.
And the reason is because we need something that the voters will support. And there is overwhelming public support among the types of taxes for sales taxes. Sometimes it's hard to rationalize why that is, but it's just a fact. That's the case. Finally, 18% of this would be paid for by people who don't live in Minnesota. Non-residents, if you use the sales tax, non-residents will pay almost one-fifth of this. Seems to me that's a plus. And that's why the sales tax appears to be the appropriate measure for this constitutional amendment. Finally, a smaller detail, but if any of this revenue is used for bonding purposes, to back up bonds, sales tax is a stable revenue source. And you don't get the nervousness among the bond crowd that you've got a revenue source backing your bonds that fluctuates. And the income tax can fluctuate. I don't want to hit this point too hard, but it's a smaller detail that has some bearing if you're trying to decide between which tax. Let me then talk just briefly about why this is important or the urgency. 2,200 of our lakes and streams are polluted with contaminants, human and animal, and they're not safe for fishing, swimming, and boating. But 86% of our lakes and streams have not even been tested. So the number is much larger than that. And we need to meet federal water quality standards. And I think most Minnesotans would argue that probably the federal water quality standards aren't good enough for Minnesota. For what we want in terms of the land of sky blue waters, we want to even exceed the federal standards. We have lost half of our forests and wetlands and 99% of our native prairies in Minnesota. The habitat loss created by this puts many of our plants and animals at risk. One in four of our native wildlife species and one in five of our native plant species are considered endangered or threatened. We're going in the wrong direction. With increased population, the pressure is going to be greater. Development is threatening our access to woods, lakes, streams, wildlife watching, hunting, fishing, and hiking. These are trends that we obviously want Minnesota's population to grow. But when people are here, and as we become bigger than Wisconsin, which will happen in the next census, we would like to have a quality of life that includes the cultural things and the natural resource things that make Minnesota special, that make people want to move here. A third of our cultural funding was cut in the last 4 or 5 years. That has jobs, access, and programming problems for us. In addition, if we are going to separate ourselves in an international economy, in an international social setting, to the extent that we have cultural literacy over and above other citizens in the United States, that will make it easier for us to compete economically, socially, and politically. That is the history of the world. And we need to really, we have in Minnesota a base in the culture area that is above most sections of the country. We've just put $400 million of private funds into our culture in Minnesota. We need to invest public funds so that we adequately use those types of resources with our young people so that they will have the kind of cultural legacy that makes them world leaders economically, socially, and politically. Mr. Chairman, there's all kinds of reasons to be against this bill. What I'm asking members to do is think about why you should be for it. And the reason to be for it is because this represents a one Minnesota approach to solving problems in Minnesota. You have a constitutional amendment that a vegetarian in my district can vote for. You have a constitutional amendment that a hunt and fisher person on an island in northern Minnesota in Center Box District can vote for, even if they never go see their daughter in a dance recital. This is a bill that brings Minnesota together. The linchpin is the clean water. The bulk of the money in this bill goes to clean water. This is a bill that brings Minnesota together. It doesn't tear Minnesota apart. stand for questions.
Questions, members? Then we've got, I think we probably have some amendments, but any questions to Senator Pogomiller? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pogomiller, thank you for bringing this bill. And I've been supportive of this in previous sessions, continue to be supportive, and continue to draw the common interest between, you know, the activities that would be funded under the Heritage Enhancement Fund, the Parks and Trails Fund, as well as the Arts, Humanities, Museums, and Public, or now what we call the Cultural Legacy Fund. And that's really my question. That I see that it was changed from the first, you know, from earlier ideas and last year and your original draft. Now in the Cultural Legacy Fund, it's been shifted, continue to fund the State Arts Board, but all of the other things that folks thought might be a good idea have been eliminated, and a new category has sprung up, access to arts education. Can you just share a little bit about that? Thanks.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogomiller.
In the sheet, the top sheet on the handout, you will notice the difference between the bill that passed the Senate and the House last year. Well, this is not the bill that passed the House, but this is the bill that passed the Senate that was in conference committee, the SAMS bill. One of the complaints about the bill, which I think many legislators shared, was that it looked a lot more like a finance bill than a constitutional amendment, because it listed all the things that many people in the Finance Committee believed were getting shortchanged in terms of funding. I support absolutely each and one of everything's there. Historical Society, Public Broadcasting, Science Museum, Humanities Commission, Film Board, Children's Duluth Museum, and zoos. I believe they should not be in a constitutional amendment. This is not a finance bill. This is a bill about legacies. And so the bill has been tightened up, and it's been tightened up to focus on heritage enhancement, and there's a portion in there for forestry, clean water, and cultural arts access for education. It's been narrowed down, yes. It was not easy for me, frankly, Senator Dibble, to meet with the advocates of those particular items and say that I felt that they should be properly funded in a finance bill, not in a constitutional amendment. I would say that every one of those can get access to these funds if they come through the door of they're doing something that meets the cultural legacy, they're doing something that meets the great outdoors agenda, or something that meets the heritage enhancement agenda. So they can, the Historical Society could come in and say, we've got an idea here that talks about the history of hunting and fishing in Minnesota that we think will enhance the future activity. And it may be that the Heritage Enhancement Council would fund that. They might not. They might come. Public television could come in and say, we're doing a 10-part series on water, and we think that will really upgrade people's attitude toward clean water and make it possible to do many projects. So perhaps the Great Outdoors Fund would decide, okay, that makes some sense. But there's no guarantee. That's the difference. The key here is the money in these three funds needs to be focused on legacy items, long-term items that are not necessarily part of day-to-day activity. This is like the home mortgage versus day-to-day rent. And we sometimes don't do what we should do on the mortgage. And so, Senator, for example, this year I am certain we're going to fund the necessary money to upgrade the technology in the finance bills for public broadcasting. I support that. I just don't think that earmarking this many items in a constitutional amendment makes sense.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Pogomiller, you know, Senator Pogomiller, before I go home this summer and talk to all the folks about all the things that we did this year, and I'll stand in front of my nursing home administrators and talk to them about, you know, the problems that they're having in the nursing homes that are forecast to close in my district, and before I talk to all the school folks about the investment that we're hopefully going to make in schools and how we're going to decrease the student share for students and, you know, beef up the early childhood education, before I vote for a sales tax increase for arts and outdoors and water, which I agree with you that is important, I'd like to know what these other things are do, because if we fail in some of these other areas, I see it difficult to justify. And you know, this isn't going to go on the ballot till 08. We've got another legislative session between now and then. And for me, before I will be supportive of this proposal, I'd like to know how these other things are going to turn out this year, this budget year. So I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
I do.
Senator Pogelner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, you know, as a former tax chair, as an author also, I'm on the record of supporting increases in taxes for those exact items. There is an agenda this year to try to accomplish that. There's no guarantee that's going to be accomplished. But the reason to move forward with this is because there is the political will. This has been worked on for a lot of years here. And the reason to pass it this year is to give a year period, once this is passed the legislature, for the organizational task to take place to make sure it's successful on the ballot. The transportation amendment that was just passed on the ballot, which was absolutely not controversial from what I could tell. Well, there were some people who were against it for some reasons, but when you think about it, you couldn't get too excited either way on that constitutional amendment. I believe $4 million was spent, money raised and spent, to pass that constitutional amendment. It will take that kind of private fundraising to pass this constitutional amendment. The stakes are much higher on this constitutional amendment. This is almost $300 million a year in revenue for things that could matter in Minnesota. So I'm guessing that we need the year period between passage this year and next year on the ballot to build the type of political apparatus that would be necessary to allow Minnesotans to make a quality choice on this, where they understood the real choice, and why they should vote yes. And so there's absolutely no guarantee on whether other bills will pass this year. But this is one where I think, again, there's not a consensus on those other things. There's not a consensus on the income tax. I think there is a growing consensus around this approach for these items as a constitutional amendment.
Senator Skoy.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Pogelner, but the constitutional amendment was passed out of session, and then the same year it was on the ballot, and it did pass. I think that that's the best route, and that's going to be my approach to this.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, will you vote for it next year and not this year? Because you did vote for it last year.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Pogelner, I would consider that, but we're going to see how much progress we make on the rest of the investment in the state before I commit to that.
Senator Steven.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Pogelner, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I have some questions about the cultural legacy portion, and maybe I'll state my questions and you can choose which one to answer first. It seems as though, I guess I'm not very familiar with the State Arts Board, so if you could talk about the State Arts Board and your confidence, or it just seems to me as if we're giving approximately $30 million to the Minnesota Board of the Arts or the State Arts Board, I'd like some reassurances that you feel that the money will be spent in a manner that is consistent with what the legislature is intending. And then my second question is about the arts education. Is that going to be distributed to school districts on the formula or given out as grants or what? I guess it's not really clear in the language how that would be.
Ms. Chairman, Senator Sieben, if you look at page 6, section 7, 43% of that would be given to the Arts Board. I believe that doubles, or a little more than doubles, what they currently get. And it's not my area of expertise, but the Finance Committee people who work in this area seem very comfortable that board has, it's a statewide board that doles out money statewide. They've got fairly elaborate processes for make sure it gets to all kinds of arts organizations in the towns around Minnesota. And the Finance Committee people who deal in this area feel very comfortable that that's a fair process that works. With regards to 57%, you can see that money would be distributed through grants to schools and Minnesota-based nonprofit arts organizations. So it would not be on the formula as envisioned here. It would be given by the Finance Committee, ultimately, in a way that would really enhance access and cultural literacy throughout the state. So with regards to that 57%, the way it's structured, it would be the Finance Committee of the Senate and the House that would make those determinations. But in grants, not on the formula.
Senator Langstedt.
Mr. Chair, Senator Polkemiller, I think this bill is mainly dealing with conservation. I think that's what you would say this is the basis for this whole thing is. There is a, when it comes to the parks, there is a provision here that says it goes according to population. When it comes to the state parks, which are mainly in rural Minnesota, there are, you know, quite large tracts of land and water and so on. When it comes to the regional parks, they tend to be much smaller and deal mainly with recreation. And it kind of bothers me that over a period of time, over half of the money there would be spent mainly for on the recreational part, where a lot of the people are, as compared to the conservation. So I guess I don't quite think that provision based upon conservation, based upon population, is really the direction we should be going in as far as the whole essence of this bill is concerned.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Polkemiller.
Senator Langseth is referring to page 3, section 5, and Finance Committee put in language, money appropriated for parks, which is a relatively small subset of the $125 million of the 43%, maybe $25 million of it, perhaps, although there's no guarantee, that money would be appropriated based on park usage, expenditure, and acreage. So it does include acreage, but it does put park usage in there. And one of the reasons for that is currently, Senator Langseth pointed out, I wanted to give the exact number. I believe I have a sheet on this. I do have a sheet on it, I just need to find it. Well, I had a sheet on this. Here it is. The metro regional system has 32 million user visits. The state parks have 8 million. And so there was a request to put something in there that recognizes that differential. But it also does allow acreage as a measurement too. So this doesn't define exactly how that money gets carved up, but it puts some notion that you do have to consider the 32 million versus 8. And I think from a political perspective, that should engender some popularity in the metropolitan area where the bulk of the votes are nowadays. And I think that could help passage of the amendment, frankly.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Langseth,
you know, this is one of those things that we talk about for a long period of time and really have good conversations about what is the proper way to handle it. And I have voted for this in the past, but I'm growing increasingly wary over legislating through the Constitution. Now, you mentioned the transportation constitutional amendment. I ended up voting against that simply because I thought that was not the proper way of the legislature should go about solving the problems of transportation. And I'm growing increasingly leery about placing any of these things in the Constitution, even as important as this is. And I think we as a legislature have to set the priorities, and unfortunately, I think we have not set the priorities of these particular issues as high as we should have, and have not come up with the money that we should have. But I'm just having more and more problem with putting things in the Constitution. I don't really think that's the purpose of the Constitution.
You know, Senator Langseth, kind of to your point, I mean, there's a lot of advocates for this bill, but the lack of funding for the all the different provisions in this bill are because the people in the state of Minnesota have been electing fiscally conservative governors, fiscally conservative legislatures that have been unwilling to raise the revenue that a lot of the people in this room think we need. And that, you know, that is how democracy works. You know, we go to the polls and we vote for people and they carry out the wishes of the majority of the voters from their district. And we are where we are relative to funding in these areas because the system is working how democracy is supposed to work. And Senator Scoy, we're in the same situation with nursing homes. I mean, we're not putting enough money into nursing homes because of the nature of democracy. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, I share a lot of your concerns, and Senator Pogomiller, this may be a comment, may be a question, but I think about 95%, this is just a rough guess, of legislators think it's bad public policy to write budget into the Constitution. I may be wrong, but I think the vast majority of us think it's a terrible way to do it. And I think I believe I would be willing to support and have advocated for more funding for habitat, for parks, for all these things than most of my colleagues. And I'm disturbed. I realize very much the importance of stable funding and more funding. And then I look at this, one of the sheets you had in your handouts, the shrinking state conservation budget and how far it's general fund direct spending on conservation and environment from 2001 to 2007, significant drops. And I think maybe it was Senator Langseth's point, but there are a lot of people who advocate for this for good reason. They want funding. I think if they used the democracy the way the democracy is supposed to work, when the governor cut the cigarette funds from natural resources, I don't know, that 4 years ago or so, it wasn't just a temporary thing. I mean, that was some legislator said, look, if we've got to balance the budget, we'll do it temporarily. But it was made permanent, and I didn't hear any outrage at that. And I'm thinking if we use the resources that are going into this constitutional amendment, maybe people would say, that's not okay, Governor. And legislators don't go along with that. And Senator Bach saying, look at who people elect, that's what they get. Well, I couldn't be more in support of more funding for this, but I think as we're fighting on this issue, I think, again, this year we're going to have another downturn in direction. And I mean, I think we ought to have the governor in here. I think he says he supports this amendment. I'd like to hear him say why he's been pushing down the funds and taking away permanently funds like the tobacco money that went to natural resources since the beginning in the, whenever that was, the 1960s. I guess I'd like your comments on why we're not putting the effort into getting the funding and the budget the way we ought to.
Senator Pogomar.
Mr. Chairman, I think members, there are efforts to put money in. And it is true what Senator Bach said. And it is true what Senator Lanxess said. But I think we need to consider the moment in history we're in. Are we going to wait 4 more years to do some of the things that we know we need to do? Because if we do want to put money into nursing homes, if we do want to put money into education, taking some pressure off the budget with this approach, if Minnesotans give the political authorization, seems to me to be a smart thing to do at this moment in time in history. This is something that allows Minnesotans to move us forward. Even if we're not authorized politically because of split government in terms of political party, to do it ourselves. I absolutely agree with Senator Dill's point in the Environment Committee. Senator Pogomiller, this was his words, why don't we raise taxes and fund these things? Well, I'd like to do that. The problem is, it doesn't look likely in the next 4 years we're going to do that. And so I implore members to not focus on what you think could be perfect. We don't live in a perfect world here on this. I am going to fight, as some of you are, who made these comments just now, for money in other revenue sources to accomplish other things. But again, I ask, look for reasons why to be for this, not reasons to be against. Reasons to be for it is that it does bring Minnesota together. It does build a political consensus around something that Minnesotans can agree on: clean water, legacy in the arts, and our hunting and fishing tradition. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with bringing Minnesota together around that, even if we're unable to bring Minnesota together around an income tax or other things. And so I really ask members to think of it in that context.
And I believe, for those who want to accomplish tax increases for those other things, if we get political authorization for this from the voters, doesn't that make it easier to argue for revenue increases in other areas? Because you've seen then that the voters are willing to pay for things that they believe are important. And we know they think education is important.
Senator Pugamore, are you at all concerned that if this passes, that future legislatures are going to take a look at the areas that this funds and act much like we act with transportation funding, and future legislatures are going to say, well, they have their dedicated account, so we don't need to put new general fund inflationary money into these areas of the budgets because they have a dedicated account. Are you at all concerned about that? And then when 25 years comes up and this goes away, when the general fund spending in these areas hasn't kept up with inflation over the next 25 years, and Senator Moi might be here and Senator Sieben might be here, the rest of us, Senator Dibble might even be here, but I don't think most of us at this table aren't going to be here 25 years from now. But Senator Pugamore, if
Pete Langseth will be here.
Are you concerned that
Keith Langseth and Cher will still be here?
Senator Pugamore, are you concerned that over that very issue, that these areas of the budget are not going to get inflationary spending from the general fund because they now have a dedicated account, and then at the end of 25 years when they have fallen way, woefully behind, and this goes away, then what happens? And I realize it won't be a problem for most of us in this room. Senator Chaudhry might still be here looking at him on the end of the table, but there could be a real serious problem with the level of general fund commitment to these areas of the budget if inflationary appropriations slip. And, I mean, I tend to think, I think most of us at this table probably think they probably will, that inflation will probably slip in most of these areas of the budget as we take a look at other priorities, because just like we do in the transportation, are you concerned about that?
Mr. Chairman, I am, and please hold that thought if you offer the amendment you've been talking about, but we'll come back to that. Language on page 2, lines 2.4 to 2.7, put in the boilerplate, supplantation language. So it's clear, at least in the language and the constitutional approach here, that it's not meant to supplant traditional sources of funding. But is there that danger psychologically? There absolutely is. But we have a balancing act here. If that's the reason to be concerned to vote against the bill, you have to weigh that against, are we ever going to put any money into these things in the next few years? And so this is a balancing act. And, Senator Bach, I'm not going to argue that that's not a concern, that they'll probably debate 15 years from now. They probably will. But I think we're talking about significant amounts of revenue, $100 million here. A third is $100 million in each of these areas, roughly, that's real money. And so even with some minor supplementing, this makes a difference. This will make a difference. And if the budgets collapse, that money is still there. That money is still there.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pogemiller, I've been a sportsman a lot longer than I have been a senator. And I think the issue originally came out by the frustration of a lot of people that pay and invest a lot of their personal income in sporting equipment to go out and take advantage of Minnesota's outdoor environment. And I believe the sportsmen are correct that some of our resources of the state haven't always gone specifically to improve game management, fishing population or fish population has dwindled in a lot of our states' lakes, and yet at the same time I've always been supportive of past provisions in order to bring this issue to the public. One of the reason why I find it to be so important is that protecting the environment and trying to improve our game management certainly ranks high as a priority list that is so high that I can easily justify it being enshrined in our state constitution as a priority to do so. However, I have a hard time bridging that concept with arts funding. I just don't see arts funding as a high enough priority to enshrine in our state constitution. So I'm a little concerned when the concept of merging these two funding goals in a single referendum question is placed before the public. I'm also concerned that, and we've had a lot of discussion about raising taxes this year in the legislative session. I'm, as you know, a critic of that. I can understand the policy debate that's being waged in the legislature this year. If those tax increases would go into effect, and then as they begin to go into effect and the public feels a little deeper pinch on those, then we're going to ask them to raise taxes even more. I, as a sportsman, are concerned that the opportunity to raise our sales tax at that time may be just the last straw on the camel's back that would kill this proposal if it goes to the public. I, as a sportsman, don't want that to happen. And so I'm very concerned that, first, there's a number of issues that come up. Raising a sales tax in order to dedicate the funding, raising it, to me, is going to invite a possible failure of ultimately the referendum when it comes before the public. Second, merging it with a cultural arts funding dedication. I have a hard time bridging the two, mixing the two, and then putting it into our state constitution. Maybe others don't. But has there been any discussion about first going back and taking it out of existing sales tax revenue, number one, and number two, can we consider making two questions on the ballot rather than merged the two issues in one question? Certainly, we've seen referendum questions come up, especially in school districts when they're considering referendums. They can consider one, two, or possibly three questions at a single time. Why wouldn't we want to put two questions on the ballot, one for the natural resource dedication and one for arts dedication at the same time?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, I absolutely don't anticipate. You voted against this last year. And I think you've thrown up every red herring that's been thrown up for years to defeat this approach or any approach. And the simple fact is that until arts was added, this never even got out of the House and Senate. It helps this bill get on the ballot. And the voters will never get a chance to vote on clean water or hunting and fishing in this manner if that's not in there. You know it, members of the legislature know it, and the public is learning that. To get this bill out of the legislature, you need a One Minnesota approach that brings people together across beliefs. This goes back to my comment. You need to have things in this bill that overcome the arguments that Senator Marty has expressed, Senator Scoy has expressed, Lank says. I don't know about Bach. I don't know if we could ever get him. But the excitement of your daughter and you in the fishing boat, when she puts that worm on there or that minnow, is the same excitement she and you feel at her dance recital. There's something spiritual about it, Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair. Senator Johnson. Sure. Senator Limmer, to that point.
Mr. Chair, first I wanted to tell the whole story about my voting history on this issue. I voted for it when it was when it was presented to the legislature as strictly a natural resource dedication. The question does come up, and we have to have this discussion about whether or not certain issues or dedicated funds for a variety of issues warrants enough to put in our Constitution. I think that's a vitally important discussion to have. The concern about whether or not there's a spiritual connection between baiting a hook with a worm or tying up ballet slippers on a little daughter's dance recital, that's probably one to be left for personal interpretation.
Well, then, Mr. Chairman, I've experienced it personally, and I believe others have also.
And the question that I had is that, Senator Pogemiller, we can work together. We can have two questions, one for your spiritual experiment and one for mine. Having this concern to merge all of these issues together in one big melted pot certainly raises questions about how the public will interpret the goal that we want.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, I think it's apparent to everybody here, you're throwing up red herrings. We're beyond that point. That's the argument of the failed past. We're trying to get this done. I would love for you to come along and help, but we need to rise above politics. Get this done.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Have we done anything with the amendment that Senator Pogemiller suggested, offered? Is it in motion?
No, there are several amendments.
There's no amendment.
Senator Johnson.
Then I'd like to speak against the supplantation language, if that is something you're considering. I think if all this passed through and there was that type of language on the bill, and the budget had a serious downturn and this was dedicated to these, then everything else would really have a difficult time. The nursing homes, the education, that I'm speaking against that language.
That's in, Senator Johnson, that's in the bill. So you would have to remove it.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not really a question. I just thought I would weigh in and maybe amplify a little bit of what Senator Pogemiller has already said. I'm supporting this bill and this effort. I share, some of the concerns that have been articulated, and I think even Senator Pogemiller shares some of those. When we dedicate certain funds, are we essentially taking off the table the work that the legislature is tasked with doing, that's weighing out the priorities that we have going into the future? I frankly have the same argument in principle about what we've done with transportation funding. But for whatever reason, we established a long time ago that was, as you know, was so important to the future success of our state that we were going to call out transportation funding in the Constitution. We've had some presentation earlier this session in this committee about what sorts of funds we spend publicly are appropriate in terms of a public benefit, a public good, and where we get the best return. And clearly, the presentation given to us, some broad areas, education rises to the very top. I think we can also argue that transportation does that. That's intuitive. That's obvious to everyone who looks at it. We do some investment in education. We do some investment in the basic infrastructure of our state. We create the atmosphere, the opportunity, the foundation upon which we build great communities and a great economy. People can locate their businesses here and succeed. What we're talking about spending here is actually a relatively small amount of money. And it's spending a small amount of money on some things that are arguably uniquely Minnesotan, certainly set us apart in the minds of folks in the upper Midwest, set us apart in the minds of folks around the country. People look to Minnesota and they believe some things to be true about Minnesota. One is we have a lot of natural areas, a lot of forests, a lot of lakes, They're clean. We can go there and catch fish. We can hunt. We can camp. We can hike. We can ride our ATVs around the woods. And it's part of why people want to be here, want to stay here, want to have their families here. We did some polling research after the elections a few years ago and found out that that continues to be just a tremendous asset in the minds of Minnesotans, why they want to stay here is our natural resources. Another thing that's uniquely Minnesotan really sets us apart in the entire country is how incredibly vigorous our cultural life is, our arts life is. For relatively little money, we get a huge return in quality of life and things for families to do. The State Arts Board has done a couple of studies in the last couple of years, and they did another one this year that was pretty ambitious and really showed the return. That's just the dollar-for-dollar return, just the dollars and cents, the economies around investment in the arts, investment in cultural life and cultural programming. So just from that perspective, just from, printed page numbers, it's an incredible investment to make in terms of perception and why Minnesota is great. And I'm telling you, it's true. I travel around the country. Folks from all over recognize that Minnesotans really got something going on. And it's important to maintain that because, we've said it before, it's a remote state. It's in the middle of the continent. We're battling a whole lot of other perceptions. One, of course, is our winter. We laugh about it, but, it's a huge issue for folks when they're contemplating where are we going to go visit, where are we going to go live, where are we going to locate our business, why the heck would we go out to that flat state, that's way the hell away from everything, and it's cold all the time and dark a lot of that time. And they find out a little bit about how incredible our communities are and how incredible our natural resources are, and it becomes something they want to do. So for a relatively small sum of money, we have a huge benefit. And, for reasons that aren't bad or negative, these things fall to the bottom of the pile when we're having those huge debates over, billions of dollars on, what should rise to the very top of the heap, and that's, education. And we saw, the downturn of 2003. Rightly so. We were arguing over what level of investment was appropriate in education and keeping our tax system fair and, what we're going to do around health care. And this stuff sank. I often stand on principle and say, we shouldn't segment these things in the Constitution. We shouldn't take away our flexibility. I hope, that we're not traveling down a path like we see in California or Colorado or other places where so much of the budget is walled off into these discrete funds that have resulted from referendum after referendum. But I don't think we're necessarily going down that path. The constitutional amendment is a tall order. It's not like initiative and referendum. It allows us to continue the stable funding, albeit small in the grand scheme of things, but has a huge payoff.
Senator Steven.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Pogue-Miller, I have some I still have some concerns about the cultural heritage section or cultural legacy fund. Not that I'm opposed to the general ideas, but I'm curious your perspective on how the State Arts Board could fund, for instance, programs that enhance or help students become aware about some of the historical sites around the state of Minnesota. And I'm thinking of that, and then this is sort of part of why I got to thinking this. I was rereading the question that would be submitted to voters, and I think there needs to be some clarification on the language for mm-hmm. that section, because it says, to preserve and enhance, and it has all these different wildlife things, which is good, and then it says, and historic sites, and its cultural heritage by increasing the sales and use tax. I think there needs, just so that voters are more clear about what they're voting on, perhaps we should take out the section where it says historic sites, since we're no longer funding the historical society, and maybe some of that funding would come through the State Arts Board, but I don't think that's very clear to voters if that is the case. And then perhaps instead of just saying it's cultural heritage, there needs to be more language and I don't want to get it too confusing, but saying something by increasing funding for the arts and arts education.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogomar.
Senator Sieben, there's not been much work done on that language in Section 3 because that's something the Rules Committee does. But, yes, there's a lot of discussion going on about exactly what that should say. Mm-hmm. And based on changes in the bill, those discussions are going on. And people badly want to make sure the wording is such that Minnesotans do have a clear view of what they're voting on because we want this to pass. And so the types of things you just mentioned are being discussed. The Rules Committee will deal with all that. And there has been, I can't remember if any changes have been made to the language from the SAMS bill. I just don't recall. But there's really been no work done on it since the original bill passed last year.
And
but there will be changes.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Pogomiller, could you please comment on the taking out the Minnesota's Historical Society's funding and how you envision that that will be? I really think that the cultural heritage of Minnesota is largely dependent on our state's history, and it's important for citizens and students to learn about the state's history. And I really liked that portion of the bill, and I'm curious how you envision that will fit into the funding for the State Arts Board.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't see the historical sites coming through the Arts Board necessarily. They could come through any three of those potentially. But, Senator Sieben, I just haven't given enough thought to what that language should look like yet. But there are a lot of people giving a lot of thought to it. Well, and frankly, Senator Sieben, there's polling being done.
But, Mr. Chair, Senator Pogomiller, I'm not talking about the language necessarily. I'm just talking about overall funding for the how Minnesota teaching of Minnesota history fits into the overall vision you have for the bill now.
I'm trying to the reason I'm having a hard time answering that is because when it was a designation for the Historical Society, you could ask the same question, and I'm not sure I could have answered it. For me, the only issue is whether there's a designation or not. And not having a designation,
I agree.
To me, tightening the bill up, I think enhances chance of passage. So it's hard for me to answer exactly how I would envision coming through those various other areas for historical purposes. But trust me, someone will try. Okay. I mean, I have talked with the Historical Society, and my guess is their first preference is to be designated. Second preference is language that allows some indication that they could have access.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pogomiller, we can talk about this later, but I haven't even talked to the Historical Society people about it. Just that the language of that's in the bill specifically mentions historic sites, and so I was just kind of trying to get at your general
cultural,
idea.
Right, the cultural language, you'll note on page history. One, it's not just in the constitutional amendment. On page one, lines 1.25, there's also a language. That is a larger laundry list so that they would not be excluded. But in terms of the funding, there's no actual designation. That's the difference between this bill and the SAMS bill. It was an actual designation in the SAMS bill. Here, there's no exclusion, but there's no designation. And we will visit more about that, because I obviously am supportive of anything the Historical Society would do that would meet kind of legacy-type activities, and would like them to figure out a way to get there if they can.
Senator Moy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pogomiller, could you comment on the sales tax is going to be a statewide sales tax. Is that right, Senator Pogomiller?
Correct.
And Senator Pogomiller, has there been any work done to see kind of where the different amounts or of the total amount of the sales tax, where the bulk of it is coming from, or do we know the distribution of where the money historically comes from?
I think the committee knows. I don't have that at my fingertips, but presume tends to come mostly from where the populated areas are.
And, Senator Pogomiller, I don't take constitutional amendments lightly. I mean, I think that as a legislature, we have to think very carefully on the direction that we go in terms of the constitutional amendments. And I have struggled with this from the beginning on how to balance whether or not I support this as a constitutional amendment, just the way that I struggle with the MVEST. And in particular, as we're talking about the sales tax, you know, from the areas that I represent, the sales tax is not really the most progressive of taxes for the people that I represent. And that was sort of the same struggle that I had when we talked about the Hassan sales tax for transit. And I was a couple of years ago of the mind that the Hassan sales tax for transit ought to be statewide, so that if it's a statewide resource, then we ought to make it a statewide opportunity for everyone to participate.
The chairman, Senator Moore, is not bringing another baggage here, is she?
No, Senator Pogemiller. But what I wanted to communicate to the group is that the one piece that has made this compelling for me, given all those multiple competing items to balance, what has really made this is your argument about One Minnesota and about how this is a bill to compel each of us to think about why we want to support this, as opposed to, I think, marginalize ourselves to talk about why we don't want to support it. And I think that I'm willing to, balance the sales tax issue, the regressivity issue, because I think that for the people that I represent, the arts, the Cultural Legacy Fund, the outdoors, the Heritage Enhancement Fund, all sort of create not one, but creates multiple layers for why this is a good opportunity, because it does bring together different parts of Minnesota and does bring together different types of Minnesotans to want to support something. And let me just also say this, that I've been here for several years now, and this is the first year that I've been here where we're talking about investments. We're talking about investments for our future. We're talking about investments for the future generation of Minnesotans. And we haven't had that kind of investment conversation in a long time. I mean, at least in the last 5 years when I first came to the legislature. And I think that it's actually profoundly optimistic, and I feel very optimistic about this legislative session, because we're not just talking about investment in this bill. I wish that this bill had passed when Dallas, was the author of it last year. But I like the idea that we're talking about investments in our tax structure. We're talking about investments in education. We're talking about investments back into the quality of life for Minnesotans. And I look at the different components of this bill, and I know that there are many reasons why different constituencies in my Senate district would say it's not a direction that they would support, and yet when you put all the components together, I could say that it's a bill that gives me a lot of reasons to say, I could set aside my concerns about constitutional amendments and the direction we want to go. I could probably set aside my concerns about the sales tax being used as a base for this, because I think in the end, if we look at the drastic cuts that have been made and the disinvestments that have been made that have had a profound impact on the infrastructure in the arts and in the outdoors in Minnesota, I think that this is appropriately a legacy bill, and it is probably... the different components are the very reason why I would vote for this. In the number of amendments that are laid up, I think that if there's any attempt to try to limit it or restrict it or to strike any of the other pieces and to restrict this bill to just, let's say, the outdoors without creating the other pieces, it would make it, I think, increasingly difficult for someone like me to find a balanced reason to support this bill.
Senator Moy, I think if this committee tinkers with it too much, if it were to pass, it probably would go back to another committee that has jurisdiction over the changes that we probably made.
Mr. Chairman, to get things rolling, I would move that Senate File 6 be recommended to pass.
Senator Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Pogemiller. I have many of the similar concerns. This similar concerns that others have had, and this has always been a close call for me. Not in the support for what is funded in this bill. I strongly support that, and I look across the tax committee here, and I see a lot of people who are some of the strongest supporters for the outdoors. I see on the tax committee some of the strongest supporters of the arts. And so it has been a difficult call for me, and ultimately I'm going to vote for the bill. But one of the biggest concerns that I have is one of the things that stresses, I think, the taxpayers I represent is are going to the sales tax as many times as we may have to. We saw that begin last year with the Twin Stadium, and so my entire district sits in Hennepin County. So we're paying that additional amount. If this goes to the ballot and voters approve this, we have in the omnibus transportation bill, Senator Dibble has a metro sales tax. The House has a metro sales tax, I think, that's more along the lines of what I introduced, which has a voter referendum on that. I suspect either if both of these end up on the ballot at the same time, they may both fail, or if this advances first, we sort of close out our opportunity to have use additional sales tax for transportation purposes. And so it's with a great deal of concern that I have as it relates to using the sales tax that that I have mixed emotions about this or mixed feelings about this. And I'm just curious if you have some thoughts about all the different sales tax proposals that we've had, factoring in the fact that Hennepin County residents are paying for what I consider a statewide asset in the ballpark. I think that's an important policy question, that we can't continue to go back to the sales tax, and this does restrict us in some ways. On the other hand, we have a pretty high priority here. So I'm just wondering if what your thoughts are in terms of how much we can actually hit the sales tax.
Senator Pogemiller.
Chairman, Senator Larson, I think we need to do the best we can to move proposals forward that we think will bring Minnesotans together. I think there's a consensus building around this approach for these activities. I think there's a consensus building around transportation, so I do not think we're going over the limit there. I think there's a consensus growing around the income tax for education, but I'm not sure that's quite as ripe. I hope it is in a month.
Amendments. Senator Sendrum, you got an amendment? Yes, no, maybe?
I'm going to pass on it.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Moy pointed out with the last discussion, I think Senator Larson as well, one of the concerns I have about this is the regressivity of our tax code. We used to, I remember a couple years ago, Commissioners Gugnu and Kudrowski were making tours of the state, and they talked about how our state was the most progressive of tax codes, and I did talk with them afterwards to correct them that ours is not the most progressive. It is perhaps the least regressive, but it is a regressive tax code, and it's getting worse, and Senator Pogemiller has made a lot of discussion of that, and I certainly would feel better if we were doing this in a more progressive manner, and I don't know the amendment number, but I do have one that would convert this constitutional amendment to a income tax, and I believe that I don't have the amendment, but I believe that the numbers they calculated was it would be a surcharge on your existing tax liability of, I think, 2.7%. So if you owed for every $100 in income tax you were paying, you'd be paying 2.7% more. It's not a 2.7% bracket. In other words, your bracket's 7-some percent. It's not 9-some percent. It's 2.7% of that 7%.
So, Senator Marty, if your income tax liability was $1,000,
then it would be $27.
Your surcharge under this would be $27.
That's correct. And it raises the numbers I asked Senate Council to work on was to generate the same amount of money that the 3/8 cent sales tax would generate. So it would be, roughly speaking, they're never exactly the same, but revenue neutral. And it would replace that 3/8 of a cent with this 2.7% surcharge. And I'm happy to try and respond to questions on it.
Council, anything to add on the amendment?
No, Mr. Chair. It's basically the same language as in the bill. It just replaces the sales tax with the income tax where appropriate. And one other change is to the date, because sales tax normally become effective in July. This will become effective January 1, 2009, to keep with the tax year structures.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Marty, I understand your amendment. Now, your majority party recently voted on increasing the income tax to the highest income tax rate in the nation a few weeks ago. And how much higher would this impose if this went into effect? Would it actually meet for the highest income bracket? Would it finally cross the line over 10%?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, if that 9.7% bracket for the 250,000 or whatever income was there, 2.7% of 9.7, it would probably bring it to 9 something. I don't know what. It would be under 10, I'm sure.
9.999.
Something. I was not calculating this number for any purpose like that. Frankly, if we made changes in the income tax, if you read the language on page 1.16 to 1.19, if we make changes in the income tax, legislature could proportionally adjust the rate of this section in order to provide the same amount of revenue as you would correct otherwise. So in other words, if we change, like one of the problems with the current bill is if you use the sales tax, what if we broaden the sales tax to clothing, or we take it away from non-prescription drugs or whatever? This is an attempt to try and correct for that by saying that if we, in other words, you have this amount of money growing at the rate of personal income growth in Minnesota, which I think is actually higher than growth of sales. In other words, income tax revenue would be growing faster than sales tax revenue. So over the long run, it would produce slightly more money, but if we change the income tax rates, this would be adjusted to compensate for that.
I think we all understand it. Senator Marty moves the A-12 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. A-12 is not adopted. Does anybody else have amendments? Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I have one more that, and this is a simple concept. It's the, I think it's A-11 amendment. And this is, I recognize the importance of trying to have stability in environmental funding, and recognize we've been going downhill fast in the last number of years on this. But I think that could be addressed with dedicated funds, statutorily dedicated funds. One of the concerns that's expressed is, you know, environmental funding has gone down, but it hasn't really necessarily in some ways. There are other things that I think are very important in this state, too, that have been going down. And one example I'll give of that is we have a growing number of low-income folks who are working people but who can't even afford housing. We have working families in homeless shelters, and what have we done in the last few years? I think the Housing Finance Agency budget has dropped from $171 million in 2000-2001 biennium to $70 million. In other words, much more than a 50% cut. And I think that's outrageous. I think we need more funding for that. I know some advocates, Senator Cohen and others, have come in with a dedicated funding source for that. It would be statutorily dedicated, and likewise with this amendment. This, I don't mean to, again, I think I actually support more funding for outdoors than pretty much most of the members of the legislature. And I do recognize the importance of stability. So instead of just doing it through the appropriations process, this would dedicate the funding from the sales tax, but it would not be in the Constitution. And I'm happy to stand for questions on that as well.
Any questions, members? Senator Marty moves the A11 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no?
No.
No.
Motion does not prevail. 11 is not adopted. Any other amendments, members?
Can I renew my motion? And re-refer to the Rules Committee.
Senator Pogemiller, the chair has an amendment that Senator Larson is going to offer. It's the A10 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, just so we don't forget, it's a re-referral to the Rules Committee.
Correct.
If it gets that far.
Mr. Chair, I move the A10 amendment.
Members, the A10 amendment, and I'm a little surprised that in the number of years that this bill has been around the legislature, this issue hasn't been addressed. But I think most of us remember when former Governor Ventura suggested that we broaden the sales tax base. And at some point, future legislatures might want to take up that issue. And I think in the event the legislature is at some time in the future broadens the sales tax base, it would be a very large windfall to the budget areas that are funded in this amendment. So, and I think it's an unintended windfall. I don't think anybody is intending somehow that if the legislature were to start taxing other things, I think Governor Ventura had suggested taxing some services, and I don't remember if he had clothing on his list or not, but we all know that our sales tax base is eroding largely because of internet sales, and we're unable to capture sales tax on that because there's a federal preemption on that. So at some point in the future, I think the legislature and or a governor is going to suggest that we broaden the sales tax base. What this amendment does is put into the constitutional language, not on the ballot, but into the constitutional language in the Constitution, that in the event that the legislature and the governor do broaden the sales tax base, that there then is an opportunity for the legislature to adjust the money that's raised to bring in basically the same amount of money that's being brought in under the bill currently, so that there wouldn't be, if we were to extend the sales tax to a number of other areas in the economy, there wouldn't be a large windfall to these accounts. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You recognize that there may be a possibility to broaden the sales tax base. We don't know the specifics of how broad that would be applied to or what services or goods that would be applied to. But you're very specific on recognizing 0.1%. Now, I don't know if that's proportional to the base broadening at some time in the future or not, but how did you arrive at the 0.1%? I can understand where you're going on it, but I don't understand how 0.1% became the magic number.
Well, I think the issue, Senator Limmer, is if the legislature needs in the future to be able to adjust the overall sales tax rate, and 0.3% is going to raise a lot more money if it's on a larger base. So at some point we have to do some rounding so that we don't carry the sales tax out into too many multiple digits. So this is just our shot at kind of a at some point stopping the rounding in the sales tax so that it brings in the same amount of money as close as we can get when we end the rounding at some point. Senator Lemire.
Mr. Chair, I might suggest some language. If you look at line 3, when it says, if you remove the word within and place the other words no less than 0.1%, if you have any broad or base broadening at all, that makes us fall to 0.1%. And that base broadening may not happen all at once. It may inch down or, you know, expand incrementally, and I don't think one simple increment would want to trigger a 0.1% requirement.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lemire, I think you're misreading what that 0.1% is. Okay. The same thing. I had the same thing in my income tax amendment. The rounding, in effect, you don't want a sales tax rate of 0.374251 or something. You want to round it to a certain point. Mm-hmm. So this is where you round it to. In other words, if the sales tax doubled, you would be cutting this 0.375% down to 0.375, but you'd be rounding it to the nearest tenth. And I think it's an important amendment. It does speak to some of the problems we have when we're putting budget items in the Constitution because we can't foresee the future. But
I see.
Well, Senator Lemire, I think the issue is we had several bills in front of the committee. I remember hearing Senator Day's bill that would have exempted local units of government from the sales tax. Would have cost us $120 million or something like that. So I think the number 3/8 potentially, depending on what the legislature does, may need to be adjusted up in order to maintain the same amount of money. So I think if you assume that the legislature at some point is going to broaden the base, your language no less than works. But in the event we do actually move in the other direction and create more sales tax exemptions, like for local governments, which is the big one that this committee has seen, then I think the word within is probably better in order to maintain the same amount of money.
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty is correct. He caught my logic as being, let's just say incomplete right now. And I'll withdraw my suggestion. I think the key word is proportionally adjust that you were trying to get at. So if other sales tax is broadened proportionally, they aren't going to lose the same, or we would not get the windfall that you're talking about, but it stays limited to, I understand.
Members on the A-10 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. Motion prevails. A-10 is adopted. On Senator Pogelmiller's motion that Senate file number 6, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Rules Committee. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogamo, I'm still wrestling with the bill. I very much want to see more funding spent in this area, and I very, very troubled by amending the Constitution this way. And I think I don't know where the votes are on the committee. I do know I'm still not there yet. So I say that because I think a lot of us have been wrestling with this issue for a long time, and as we do, we watch the budget get cut and cut and cut. And you know, and I know that we have a political process where we can pressure the governor, we can pressure each other to put more money in, and frankly, I think we ought to be doing that. And anyway, I'm just stressing my frustration because I don't think this is a good policy way to get the funding we much need.
Senator Pogelmiller, one final
word. Mr. Chairman, I just hope the committee would allow the bill to keep progressing. I think the more people deal with it, the more they become comfortable with it. It's not a perfect bill.
On the Pogelmiller motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
Division. Chair is uncertain. Those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed. Motion does not prevail. The bill is not passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it.
Senator Pogler, and to people, I was intrigued by Senator Limmer's idea of two amendments, and I was coming from a little different track than he was. Has it ever been considered that we have two amendments, one that says raise the sales tax by 0.3%, or pick a number, and a separate question that says, for the purposes of this bill, if we put a number in the Constitution permanently, not with a 25-year sunset, but permanently, put a number in the Constitution that said, and I think 1.5% of the state budget would probably work, doing just kind of the quick math on a napkin. If we put a provision in the Constitution that said no less than 1.5%, or pick another number, needs to be spent in these areas, and we ran it out as two separate questions, I wonder if we might be able to find some additional support. And just a thought, as you know, this bill's sitting in this committee, and there's a lot of time left this year and next year, but I think people need to continue to have a discussion about how we move forward, because there is a lot of interest in this, and there's no question these areas of the budget have been underfunded. Senator Mwah.
Mr. Chair, you know, as someone who has put it on the record that I have struggled with this, but I've continued to support this because of the different pieces that are in this bill, and I'm now profoundly puzzled as to how this same bill with similar language and similar allocations could have passed out of this committee and passed out of the Senate last year, but now it's suddenly failing in this committee. I'm profoundly puzzled, and I'm very disappointed. I think that this is our opportunity to invest, and I think we've squandered that by not being consistent with where we've been. So,
Senator Moore, I think people can stay at the table. I mean, the bill's still around the legislature, and there's certainly time to take it back up in the event that you know, we think we can put the votes together to pass something. But Senator Langsdale.
Mr. Chair, as far as people voting in one way one year and another way, we kind of live and learn. And it just seems like we're heading down a slippery slope when it comes to budgeting through the Constitution. And that's where I came to the conclusion this just wasn't the way to do it. I did support Senator Marty's amendment where we would do it statutorily, and I would have voted for that. But to put it in the Constitution, I just think is too rigid, and we shouldn't be budgeting through the Constitution. And I have come about that over a period of time. And there are other things that during my 33 years I've changed my mind on, and part of it was the direction we're going in. And I just think this is one more step in a direction we should not be going in. It doesn't have to do with what this money was going for. It has to do with should we be budgeting through the Minnesota Constitution. And I have come to the conclusion we should not. And I probably hadn't come to that conclusion a year ago.
Anything else, members? Senator Pogler, session at 11 o'clock?
11 o'clock, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Members, we're going to meet again on Friday.
Chairman, I did want to mention that this is a learning experience. Thank you.
It's. On Friday, members, the Metropolitan Sports Commission is going to come in. They unveiled a proposal for a redevelopment plan in Minneapolis around the Metrodome site. Friday, they're going to come in and give us an opportunity to ask some questions about what that redevelopment all encompasses. And I think we know what the anchor tenant is. So, members, Friday morning, 8:30, this meeting's adjourned.